I want to thank you all for tuning in this evening and joining me on this exploration of this Bible literacy test. This particular test this evening, this question this evening that we're going to be tackling, which is question 16. The question is four beasts, and in parentheses it says world empires. Where do we find in the Bible this, or if you'll remember, the series that we're doing follows a quiz, an Ambassador College, what looks like an entrance exam to me, and it has 60-some questions on it, and you were to fill in a blank before a statement, and either fill in what they're asking for or ask. So, for example, if it's a statement, they want to know where in the Bible would you find this. So we're at that place within this study that says, where would you find these things? And so this particular one, on number 16, is where would we find the four beasts? This is covered for us in Daniel chapter 7. So we're going to begin there, as we do with each of these. And again, we're trying to answer the question, why is this important? It's not just that we know in our Bibles, where would I go to find the four beasts that are talked about in the Bible? It's not just about that. It's about, why is this important? That's a good question. Why should we know about that? And what is it that we need to understand? So as I've tried to do with the other Bible studies in this series, I will attempt to go through and answer that question. Why is this important? So we'll begin here today in Daniel chapter 7 and verse 1. The heading in my Bible says, Vision of the Four Beasts. It says, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. So just a little bit of context as we go through this, let's add just a bit of that to help with our understanding of what it is that we're reading and what we're going through this evening. The time frame about that this would have been about would have been about 550 BC. This would have been when Daniel would have been having this particular dream. Daniel didn't sit down and use it, like the book of Daniel isn't a journal in the way that you and I might think of a journal where he daily writes something. We don't have a daily record of things. We have some events of things. And here, so this is about 55 years after he's been taken captive in Babylon. He's been living in Babylon longer than he was alive in Jerusalem. So he might have been 17 or so. The best guess of scholars is he might have been around 17 years old when he was taken captive and taken back with the very first captives. So Babylon conquered Judea in three waves, and the very first wave was around 605 BC, and Daniel was taken along with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And we see that in Daniel chapter 1. So I'm just going to read Daniel chapter 1 here to give us some context. Daniel chapter 1, and we'll read through verse 7. So Daniel chapter 1:1-7, it says, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. I'm sorry, my eye's not falling correctly. I wish I could have had this thing elevated a little bit. It would make it a little easier on me. So I'm going to tip it up a little for myself. Bear with me while I get my reading glasses at the right angle to read here. Okay, it says in verse 2, it says, and the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. That's into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. And with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time, they might serve before the king. Now, from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them, the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. So you know those names. We probably more quickly think of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when we think of the fiery furnace. And we probably don't think of Daniel as Belteshazzar. That was his Babylonian name. But we have some context then for when is the time period? How long has Daniel been in captivity? Well, let's briefly walk through, for your benefit, sort of like who's who and how did we get to where we are? Because when Daniel was taken into captivity, it was by Nebuchadnezzar. But we just read in chapter 7, verse 1, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. So 55 years later, Nebuchadnezzar's no longer with us. And this is around 550 BC. And if you remember, we're counting down in the Old Testament in years, and then we count up in years in the New Testament, meaning we're going from in the BCs, that we go backwards from zero, so to speak, all the way back to antiquity. And then we go forward in AD, in the AD years. So here we are about 550 BC. So this is about 550 BC, which would have been some 55 years. Remember, 605 minus 550 is 55. After Nebuchadnezzar, now he died in 562 BC. So 562 to 550 is 12. I'm sorry, that's 12 years. And then his son, Amal Marduk, reigned, and he only reigned a couple of years. And then Nergal-Sar-Usur, he murdered his brother-in-law, Amal Marduk. Now, he reigned for 4 years. And then Labashi-Marduk, which is the infant son of Nergal-Sar-Usur, was assassinated after only a few months by Nabonidus, in 556 BC. And Nabonidus was king from 556 BC through 539. So it is during the reign of Nabonidus. Now, Nabonidus, after about a year, put himself in sort of a timeout. He took himself out. He did not like the administration of the kingdom. So he set his son, Belshazzar, as a sort of regent over the kingdom. So a regent is one who is appointed to govern for, let's say, one who is too young, say for an infant. If they had an infant king, you could appoint a regent to rule instead of the infant king or on his behalf, or one who is absent, and that would be the case with Nabonidus, who in essence took a hiatus. He literally did not like the day-to-day running of the kingdom, the administration, so he gave that over to his son. His son ruled for quite a long time in his stead. Now, I wanted to touch on one thing before we move on, and that is just a structural issue with the book of Daniel, because you're going to notice if you read through the book of Daniel from its beginning to its end, there's a pretty clear line of demarcation within the book, which in essence segregates the book into two halves. The first half, which is chapters 1 through 6, is a fairly consistent historical presentation. They're largely chronological, and they tell the story of Daniel, his friends, their experiences in Babylon under several different kings, including Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar and Darius and Cyrus even. And so Belshazzar is still ruling. He's the one who is actually who's ruling for his father as regent before Babylon is taken into captivity, or before Babylon is defeated by the Persians. And so, but if you be, so as you begin chapter 7, it seems like you're going backwards, because in chapter 6, we see other things being talked about, kings that happened afterwards. And so it can be like, well, what is going on here? So the prophetic chapters are chapters 7 through 12, and these chapters are not chronological. So they are just literally focused on prophecy, and so they just happen to be where prophecies were told in what time frame, and they relate to the characters involved during that specific time frame. So that's important, I think, for you to understand, because chapter 7, for example, contains this vision of Daniel, which he had during the reign of Belshazzar, which predates the events in chapter 6 when Daniel was serving under Darius. So I just want you to understand, well, why is that like that? And that should help. Now, Belshazzar was defeated by Cyrus the Great, king of Persia, in 539 BC. And this, of course, is the event that led Judah to return from captivity to Jerusalem, because Cyrus gave the decree sending them back. Cyrus appointed Darius as governor over Babylon. Now, he's believed to be Gubaru, G-U-B-A-R-U, Gubaru, in extra-biblical cuneiform texts. So you'll find this character, Gubaru, who ruled at exactly this same time under Cyrus over Babylon, over all of the territories that that formerly were Babylonian, which was quite a large territory. And he ruled as governor over these this former territory of Babylonia. Of course, that included Syria, Phoenicia, and Palestine. So keep in mind that when you see the name Darius, that's the context of that and who he was. Now, getting back to our topic here, because we are prior to Darius, we are under Belshazzar first, when Daniel has this dream. So we're back in Daniel chapter 7 now. And we're picking this up now in verse 2. And we'll read through verse 8, and we're going to give ourselves some pretty good context here for this four beasts. And I'm holding up two hands like that's eight. It's four. I mean only four. Sorry. So verse 2 says, Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. The first was like a lion, and had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and the man's heart was given to it. Verse 5 says, and suddenly another beast, a second, like a bear. It was raised up on one side and had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And they said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. After this, I looked, and there was another, like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking pompous words. Now, previously, you will probably remember this. Now, previously, Daniel had had another vision. And this is told chronologically, though, back in Daniel chapter 2. You'll probably remember that Nebuchadnezzar had had a dream. He was very upset by the dream, and he had called all of his prophets, for lack of that, that's what he called them, all of the prophets, to him, and he gave them a requirement. And he said, I don't want any, this, to me, this kind of funny from his perspective. Like, you think he has any trust issues? Because he says, I'm not telling you the dream. I want you to tell me what I dreamed. Okay, we're going to start with that. You tell me what I dreamed, and then tell me what it means. And of course, all of his prophets were like, you can't do that. No one can do that. It's impossible to do that. Only the gods can do that, and there's no gods here because we're all physical men. So that's a little bit of the backstory of that. So Daniel chapter 2, Daniel is given the vision by God, so he knows not only what was the dream, but of course God gave him what the dream was about. And he told these things. So now let's go to Daniel chapter 2, and I'm going to pick this up in verse 31. So Daniel 2, verse 31, we'll read through 35. He says, "You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. You watched while a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces." Verse 35, "Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors. The wind carried them away so that no trace of them was found. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth." So Nebuchadnezzar's dream foretold the rise and fall of successive kingdoms. Let's look at this, and we'll notice here in verse 36 as we continue. "This is the dream as Daniel now interprets it for him, having been given the answer by God. Now we will tell the interpretation of it before the king. You, O king, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field and the birds of heaven, he has given them into your hand and has made you ruler over all. You are this head of gold, but after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to yours, then another, a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything. And like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others." Double checking myself, see how far I need to read here. We'll read through verse 45. So that was verse 40. So we'll read through 45. "Whereas you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, yet the strength of the iron shall be in it. Just as you saw the iron mixed with ceramic clay, and as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. As you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay, they will mingle with the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. Inasmuch as you saw that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation is sure." These kingdoms, which are pictured by Nebuchadnezzar's dream, would dominate Europe right up to the end of the age, right up until the return of Jesus Christ. Nebuchadnezzar was given an amazing dream showing essentially the rulers of Europe all the way until the time of Christ. That's pretty remarkable when you think about that. Notice over here in Revelation chapter 13, many, many years later, the Apostle John is given a vision himself. He sees also a beast. So we'll go to Revelation chapter 13. And I hope what you'll see this evening as we go through this is the connection between Daniel chapter 2, Daniel chapter 7, and Revelation chapter 13, all talking about a beast. And here's the thing. I just want to make sure that you understand. This is a part of a very large subject, all about end time events and those events leading up to them. This piece of it, the four beasts, this relates to that particular issue. And that is just the ruling governments that started with Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon, and which will govern and run Europe all the way until the time of Christ. So we're really going to try to stay pretty focused on just that issue as the scripture talks about it, describes it, and then as we can see from history how these prophecies were fulfilled. So Revelation chapter 13 now, verses 1 and 2. Where John sees this, he says, "Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority." So here we have the same symbols that we read previously in Daniel chapter 7. If you remember, and you can see this quite clearly, is that we have a beast now. It's a whole beast with seven heads and 10 horns. We see that it also has the parts of a leopard, and it also has the parts of a bear and parts of a lion. See, it isn't, remember that these are symbols. And, you know, the symbols themselves have meaning. It's not the full description, and the point isn't to try to match the full description of each and every element of each and every symbol, meaning how come we don't see the bear fully described and separate and independent? It's because we have two different individuals that God gave a vision to. And so in John's vision, these things are amalgamated into one beast with all the same elements. And it helps us to understand, we'll see as we go through this, you can clearly see and understand how God reveals what's going to happen over time through these two different prophets that he used. And I think it's quite wonderful how he does this, and so that we can see this. Okay. Now let's understand what these symbols mean. Let's go back to Daniel chapter 7. So let's, if you will, this evening, keep your place in Daniel chapter 7 and keep your place in Revelation chapter 13. And if you really want to get crazy, you might put a marker in Daniel chapter 2, although honestly, that's just a couple pages for me. Okay, so Daniel chapter 7 then. Back to Daniel chapter 7, and I think I got my little bookmarker here. Okay, so now I'm going to pick this up in verses 15 through 17. It says, and the heading for my section here in my Bible is Daniel's vision interpreted. So here it is in verse 15 of Daniel 7. It says, "I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near to one of those who stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. Those great beasts, which are four, are four kings, which arise out of the earth." Okay, so we're very clearly told here now. Daniel is told, okay, same as he did with Nebuchadnezzar, where he was given very specific explanation of what the vision meant. Here he's being told specifically what these beasts mean. They represent four kingdoms. It's not ambiguous. Now, as we saw in Daniel chapter 2, the symbols there represented kingdoms also in the form of kings. History shows that these kingdoms began with Babylon and culminated with the Roman Empire. So let's look briefly here at the first beast, which is Babylon. So back to Daniel chapter 2. Back to Daniel chapter 2 and verses 37 and 38. "You, O king, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom." Daniel 2:37. "For the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field, and the birds of the heaven, he has given them into your hand and has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold." Okay, so that tells us very specifically then that Nebuchadnezzar was the king that represented that was represented by this head of gold. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, of course, he was the king of Babylon. And in Daniel, he's represented, let's go back to Daniel chapter 7, and note how he's represented there. In Daniel chapter 7, verse 4, it says this is the first beast. Now, in Daniel chapter 2, the first beast, if you will, is the head of gold of the man, of the image. Okay, so here he's called beast. There it's not called beast, there it's called an image with these four elements to it. Here, these same governments, these same kingdoms are called beasts. And so here, verse 4 says, this first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And a man's heart was given to it. This imagery conveyed what later happened to Nebuchadnezzar. Turn back to chapter 4. So here we are, Daniel chapter 4, verses 28 through 33. Daniel 4, 28, Nebuchadnezzar's humiliation. All this came upon King Nebuchadnezzar. At the end of the 12 months, he was walking about the royal palace of Babylon. The king spoke, saying, "Is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty?" While the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven. "King Nebuchadnezzar," I wish I had a voice that would be like really booming at this point, because you can imagine that, right? "King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you. And they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen, and 7 times shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses." In verse 33, "And that very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws." So the imagery here is unmistakable, that this first beast was represented by Nebuchadnezzar. And picturing the feathers being plucked from his wings is this imagery here, where he was, in essence, he became like a dumb animal for 7 years for his arrogance before the Almighty God. Now, King Nebuchadnezzar died in 562 BC, and over roughly the next 7 years, best I can see, his kingdom was in a power struggle. Nabonidus finally took control in 556 BC, and after reigning for about a year, he made his son Belshazzar regent, ruling as king in his stead. Belshazzar ruled Babylon until his death in 539 BC, when the Persians captured Babylon under Cyrus the Great. So you have some time elements here to help with organizing the whole passages that we're dealing with here for yourself. Babylon, of course, is that head of gold, then, as we saw in Nebuchadnezzar's dream. He's the lion with the four wings, or with the two wings on its back, who had them plucked out. He's that lion in Daniel 7, and he's the mouth of a lion in John's vision in Revelation. So the mouth of the lion simply captures the imagery that says the lion, Babylon, was a part of this great beast in Revelation 13. Now, the second beast, so we saw the first one was Babylon. This second beast is called Medo-Persia. Now, we hyphenated that way because this was essentially two peoples together in which Persia was the military might or power of the two different groups. And so you have a blend. That's why it's called Medo-Persia. Now let's go back to Daniel chapter 2, verse 39. Daniel chapter 2, verse 39. "But after you," now, so this is after Nebuchadnezzar, "but after you shall arise another kingdom inferior to yours." Okay. In 539 BC, Cyrus the Great placed Darius, who was a Mede, over the newly conquered and vast territory of Babylon, which included Syria, Phoenicia, and Palestine. This empire ruled under many kings until 332 BC, when it fell swiftly to the Greeks under Alexander the Great. So a little over 200 years later. So they ruled about 200 years over this. So the Persians ruled for a total of about 200 years. So it gives us a good perspective then of who they were and that they formed this second beast. So this second beast is represented in Nebuchadnezzar's dream by the chest and arms in Daniel's dream. And as the bear with three ribs in its mouth. Okay, so in Nebuchadnezzar's dream by the man who had his chest and arms. And then in Daniel's dream, it was the bear with three ribs in its mouth. And that's important. In John's vision, it is the feet of a bear. The three ribs represent three conquered nations, two under Cyrus, which was Lydia in 546 BC, and Babylon in 539 BC. And then under his son Cambyses, Egypt in 525 BC. So you've got Lydia, Babylon, and Egypt all forming those three kingdoms that were conquered by Medo-Persia, like a bear consuming them all with great power. Those are the three ribs in the bear's mouth. Now, the third beast is the Greeks. So again, Daniel chapter 2 and verse 39. Daniel 2 verse 39, this is the latter portion of that. He says, then another, a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. So now we have another kingdom, a third kingdom. Now let's see how Daniel describes that here in Daniel chapter 7. So there's a couple of things, and I think I end up coming back to this, but I want to make sure that I get you really covered here on these two different beasts. Daniel says here, let's just touch basically back on here on the second beast with Daniel chapter 7, where he describes this next beast. He says, another beast, a second, like a bear. It was raised up on one side. And the reason I wanted to come back and touch on that is because that's how you understand that this refers to Medo-Persia, because Persia was greater than the Medes. And so the bear is on its side, where the stronger side is up and the lower side is down. And it's the imagery showing you two kingdoms together that form the one, the Medes being the lower or the lesser. And then the three ribs representing those kingdoms that were conquered under Cyrus and then under his son. Just wanted to wrap that thought together for you. Now under this third beast, we see a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And then in Daniel chapter 7, here in verse 6, it says, and after this I looked, and there was another like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. So this third beast, which is described as a leopard and had on its back four wings of a bird, is to indicate the swiftness with which this very powerful beast accomplished its conquerings, so to speak. And so Alexander swept across the Hellespont in an amazing record time. He basically conquered all of Palestine, all of Persia, if you will, going all the way as far over as modern-day India and Pakistan, all the way down as far south as North Africa, all the areas north, all the way up to Greece, and to Asia Minor, which is modern-day Turkey. So he had a vast empire, and he moved very quickly, and in 9 years conquered all of it. Like, that is remarkable. That's why God used this imagery of this leopard. Now, upon the death of Alexander, so we're still talking about one nation, Greece. There was no successor for Alexander, and so his kingdom fragmented into four separate Greek kingdoms. still one nation, the Greeks, under four different kings now. And those kingdoms were one ruled by Antipater, that's Greece and Macedonia, then Lysimachus, that's Thrace and Asia Minor, then Seleucus, which is Syria and territory east to the Indus River, which is basically India and Pakistan, and then Ptolemy, ruling in Egypt over North Africa. And then notice also here in Daniel 6 that this beast also had four heads and dominion was given to it. The third beast is represented by Nebuchadnezzar's bronze belly and thighs. It's represented in Daniel's dream by this four-headed leopard that had these wings for speed. And in John's vision, it's also represented by a leopard. And we see here, the leopard represents speed and power. And this, of course, accurately described Alexander's army and its accomplishments. But also note that the leopard in Daniel 7 has these four heads, which obviously represent the four subsequent kingdoms. Remember, the four heads were on the same beast. Okay? So the beast is Greece, originally under Alexander the Great, and then the four heads represent these four kings. I hope that makes sense to you. Now, I want to make a side note here for you, just because this is a Bible study, and so I can add in little fun notes. Alexander the Great spread Hellenism. It was the pinnacle of his ambition to spread Greek culture, which is called Hellenism, throughout all of Greece's conquered territories. So imagine you had all of these different nationalities that went all the way across, all the way over to India and Pakistan, modern day, of course, and then all the way down to North Africa, all the varied and different peoples. Alexander brought to all these people Greek culture, Greek language. Like, that was the predominant effort of his, was to bring these things and unite everyone underneath one Greek rule. And so everything was done in Koine Greek, which is the the language of commerce, the language of the most baseline. It wasn't like the most formal language. It's like much more casual. Let's call it casual language. So Koine Greek is casual language. It's casual Greek. And it's the way most Greeks would talk, so that pidgin speaking Greeks. So, you know, when somebody comes to America and they learn English, oftentimes they have a broken English as they struggle to learn how to speak English. And I've studied German for 2 years, and believe me, I'd be willing to bet a lot of money that my German's quite broken. And so I don't expect to go to Germany and speak fluent German. They would probably laugh at me at my Koine German, basically, which is called Lochdeutsch. It's Low German, and I have a lot of that probably now. Anyway, just so you understand, so that's what Alexander's ambition was, and it worked, because under Greece, all of Judah, you know, essentially got educated in Greek, traded in Greek, spoke in Greek, picked up Greek art and literature, Greek customs, Greek thinking, and that influenced profoundly what happened to Judah as a nation all the way up to and through the time of Jesus Christ. And so if you want to know the roots of what we see as we turn our pages into Matthew chapter 1, and we see this very different arrangement in Palestine than we see as we exit Ezra and Nehemiah, which are truly the last books written. Malachi was the last prophet, but not the last of the books written. And so Ezra was the last writer recording everything that was going on. And so as we leave the Old Testament, we enter the New Testament, we have this interesting change that had happened, and it was because of what Alexander had brought. And of course, to one degree or another, Seleucus and Ptolemy, who both ruled and reigned in Palestine for varying different periods of time, Ptolemy had a passion for making sure that this carried on, but he wasn't as fanatical as Seleucus. And so just something I wanted to pass on to you for your education this evening in the Bible study. So that's the third beast, Greece. Now, Greece was deposed starting at about 168 BC, and that culminated at about 31 BC. and which, of course, ended Hellenistic Greek dominance over all of the world. And Roman rule marched inexorably across Europe. Now, let's go back here to Daniel chapter 2 again and be refreshed then on this fourth beast. So Daniel chapter 2, where it says, now, the fourth kingdom, this is verse 40. So Daniel 2, verse 40, we'll read here first. And the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything. And like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others, which of course it surely did. Now let's turn over to Daniel chapter 7. And verse 7. So Daniel 7 and verse 7. And after this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful, terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. Now, that's important for us to understand, because the Roman Empire absorbed all of the other empires. It dominated their territories, and it surpassed them in size and strength. It was truly greater than all of the other kingdoms that came before. It inherited the regal splendor of ancient Babylon, which is symbolized by the lion's head. And of course, if you look back and you see Roman historical, all the art and the literature and all of that, the grandiose marble and all these wonderful structures and all that that was done under the Romans, magnificent royal majesty is a wonderful way to describe that ancient kingdom. It embodied the vastness and the overwhelming military might of the Persian Empire, which was represented by the bear's powerful legs. And of course, as the greatest war-making force in the world had ever known, it also possessed the speed, cunning, and ferocity of Alexander's armies, which is symbolized by the leopard. And this is why we see this description then in Revelation 13 of all of these elements on one beast. So that we see that John was seeing all the characteristics of the former in one beast, and truly the Roman Empire had all the characteristics of all of those kingdoms which it dominated. Now, this fourth beast, this Roman Empire, ruled until 476 AD, when the Western Roman Empire fell to barbarian invasions, marking the end of ancient Rome's dominance in the West. Now, around 330 AD, both of these in AD now, of course, were this is the dominant period of Rome's rule is in AD. The empire was set up around 330 AD into two divisions, the West with its capital at Rome and the East with its capital at Constantinople. And we'll see just in a little bit how important that was for this beast. Now, so we have these four beasts that are described, but you'll remember there was another element on this fourth head, and that is that it had 10 horns. So these four kingdoms that we've been reading about, they've all risen. Well, the first three have risen. And of course, by now they've all fallen. We know that with the Roman Empire falling in 476 BC as it was, except this fourth beast refuses to die. And that's the interesting thing about the prophecies about this beast and the role of the 10 horns. So again, Daniel chapter 7 and verse 7 says that this fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong, huge iron teeth, it was devouring, breaking in pieces and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. And as we're going to see, these 10 horns represent 10 revivals of this fourth beast. Turn over here to just verse 24, chapter 7 here, still Daniel chapter 7, now verse 24. The 10 horns are 10 kings, so there can be no question that these are still kings, that these also represent kings, who shall arise from this kingdom. So now we know that these 10 kings, I've got 10 hands here, I don't want to lose my place. We got 10 horns, which represent 10 kings coming out of the one beast. The same kingdom. So these are all subsequent revivals of the same Roman Empire. the 10 horns are 10 kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall arise after them, and he shall be different from the first ones, and shall subdue 3 kings. So these 10 kingdoms arise out of or from the fourth kingdom. These kingdoms continue from 476 AD until the time when Christ comes with the kingdom of God to destroy or conquer all the kingdoms of men. Back to Daniel chapter 2 now in verse 44. Daniel chapter 2, back here in verse 44. And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. So that's obviously referring to Jesus Christ's kingdom, the kingdom of God that he brings to this earth, and it will never be toppled, displaced, or destroyed. Now, one of the things we know for a fact historically is that there have never been 10 kingdoms, 10 kings that all came out of the Roman Empire, that all ruled simultaneously with one another. So we know that did not happen. And so if there are going to be 10 kings and they didn't rule simultaneously, then they must have ruled subsequently. In other words, in order of time, one after another, in succession. Revelation chapter 13 again. So if you kept your marker, Revelation chapter 13 and verse 1 said, "Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea," which is a way of saying that it comes on the scene quickly and mysteriously, "having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name." So we've got 7 heads here and 10 horns. But remember, this is the same beast. So how do we get from 4 beasts to 7 beasts and so forth? Well, remember, the fourth beast is the Roman Empire, and it consumed or became like or took on the characteristics of the previous 3 kingdoms. But here it's the Roman Empire's 4 kingdoms broken down into, with the 10 horns, that has 10 kingdoms that subsequently follow it as revivals of this fourth beast. Here we have 7 heads explained. Now, here's how we see these 7 heads that are covered for us in Revelation 13. Head number 1 was Babylon. Head number 2 was Medo-Persia. Heads number 3, 4, 5, and 6 all were Greece. Remember, it's the leopard. And while it started as Alexander the Great, it didn't change. It just fragmented into 4 Greek kingdoms. And so heads number 3, 4, 5, and 6 are Greece. 1 under Alexander, of course, and then 4 under Antipater, Lysimachus, Seleucus, and Ptolemy. And then the 7th then was this Roman Empire. The 4th beast of Daniel 7 is the 7th head of Revelation 13. So the Apostle John, while writing the book of Revelation, he lived during the rule of the 4th beast, this 7th head. And we have to note that this head was wounded. We're still here in Revelation 13. Notice verse 3. "And I saw," Revelation 13, 3, "and I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast." So since John was living during the time of the 4th beast, during the 7th head, then it was obviously this 7th head that was wounded. And it was a mortal wound. And of course, mortal means deadly, means leads to death, or certainly the appearance of death in this case. Because remember, these are prophecies that are designed to help us to see and to understand what God would bring about in the governments of men and in these empires of men leading up to Jesus Christ's return. Now, the seventh head had to have died, and indeed the Roman Empire did die in its then current form. At first, when it was overran by the barbarian Vandals in 455 AD, so we begin with 455 AD. Remember, we noted that Rome as an empire ended in 476 BC. That's when the death of the fourth beast, the seventh head, was sort of official. We can use that in air quotes. But then Odoacer. Let's call it Odoacer. It's probably wrong. It's probably, if he was alive, he'd probably be mortified. But anyway, he was a Heruli, and those were barbarians, and he set up his government in Rome in 476 AD, and that constitutes when Rome was no longer in power in the West. And then finally were the Ostrogoths, who ruled in the Roman territory from 493 to 554 AD. Again, all these are supposed to be ADs. If I have ever said BC, I apologize. I mean, now all of these should be in ADs. I'm just thinking to myself, I wonder if I said BC, because I could do that totally. That'd be me. Now, remember, the seventh head that was mortally wounded was later healed, which we read. That head was mortally wounded, but it was subsequently healed. Again, this is in Revelation 13, verse 3. I saw one of its heads as it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. Okay. So these three barbarian kingdoms filled the period in history known as the Transition Age. This was the period between when the head was wounded and then subsequently healed. And these are the first three horns of the ten. Now, they were plucked up, it said, or uprooted. So let's go back to Daniel. That's why it's so important for us to keep our places here in Daniel 7 and Revelation, so we don't have to try to hop back and forth. So again, Daniel chapter 7, verse 24. The ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall rise after them. He shall be different from the first ones and shall subdue three kings. So we see three kings are subdued somehow by another or different king. So let's go back here to verse 8. Notice a couple things to pull the pieces all together. So Daniel 7, verse 8, I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots. And there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking pompous words. So this little horn represents the Roman Catholic Church as it came onto the scene. It was a national power. It was both a political and a religious organization. So it was different from the political and military power of the Roman Empire. This was a political and religious force. So it was different than the others. And it didn't directly depose or destroy or conquer these first three horns. It instead directed the conquering of these three horns through the Roman Empire, the residue of that empire, which was in the East. So now we have seven kingdoms to come. The deadly wound of the fourth beast, the seventh head, was healed under Justinian. He was the emperor of the East from Constantinople. So you remember, going all the way back to 330 AD, Rome, or the Roman Empire, was divided into two divisions. The West was conquered by the barbarians, but Justinian, here in 554 AD, was ruling in the East. And it was him who conquered the barbarians and reunited. Reunited Rome, which this is known in history as the Imperial Restoration of the Empire, accomplished under Justinian with the help and support of the Holy Roman Catholic Church. This is that little horn, that other power. Okay, Revelation 13, verse 5. So back in Revelation 13, 5. Notice that this revived power was to continue for 42 months. It says, and he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue 42 months. Now, our understanding prophetically is that when it comes to the punishments of Israel, each day represents 1 year, making 1,260 years. That's 30 days per month times 42 months. Does that fit the timeline of history? It's a good question. Well, the healed beast reemerges in 554 AD under Justinian, which is the fourth horn. So those three barbarian kingdoms represented the first three horns. They were supplanted, uprooted, destroyed. That was ultimately by Justinian with the help and support of the little horn. And now Justinian's government forms the fourth horn out of the 10 total horns. Afterwards came the Frankish kingdom, which is the French. That was the fifth horn. Then the Holy Roman Empire, first under Germany, that's the sixth horn, and then the Austrian Habsburgs, that's the seventh horn, and then Napoleon's kingdom, again, back to the French, and that's the eighth horn. So through Napoleon, we have eight of the 10 horns accounted for. And what's fun here, just hey, side note here, if you're doing or playing with any AIs, I encourage you to go and just do a search on this. You're going to find that the AIs will walk you through this almost as effectively as God has revealed it to us to understand. It's amazing. I was doing a little bit of play with that today. So anyway, let me just finish up here. So when Napoleon was defeated in 1814, the healed beast's rule ended. So that was 554 AD to 1814 AD. And you know what that precisely equals? 1260 years. Now, Revelation chapter 17 and verse 8. Revelation chapter 17 and verse 8. So just over a couple of pages here. I want you to note a couple of things. We're wrapping up. 17 verse 8. The beast that you saw was and is not and will ascend out of the bottomless pit and go to perdition. And those who dwell on the earth will marvel, whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast that was and is not and yet is. In 1870, Garibaldi united the numerous small divisions within the Italian peninsula into one single nation, establishing a kingdom that marked the beginning of the ninth horn, which ultimately culminated in Mussolini's fascist regime. But this kingdom was not a powerful world-dominating power like the old Roman Empire, which is why John describes it as the beast that was and is not. With the downfall of Mussolini, we've been waiting for the rise of the 10th horn, the one that is yet to come out of the bottomless pit, as it was just described for us. So God has been orchestrating the events of history to precisely fulfill the prophecies he foretold long ago. These governments, which God established from Babylon all the way through the Roman Empire, which would rule from the time of Nebuchadnezzar through the time of Jesus Christ's return, and all of this has been foretold by God. One day, Christ is going to return, though, and he's going to establish God's government on this earth, overthrowing the governments of men and leading humanity out of the misery, pain, and suffering caused by man's self-rule under the sway of Satan's corrupt influence and into a new era of peace, righteousness, and joy under God's perfect rule. I think it's wonderful and encouraging for us to go through a study like this to be reassured that God has given us the truth and an understanding and how powerful prophecy can be when we understand it. We don't have a perfect view of it. We see through a glass darkly in some respects, but we have the big rocks And that's encouraging that God has given us an understanding of what those are. So thank you for watching this Bible study, tuning into this Bible study. As with the others, I'll post later links to any of the previous Bible studies in this series so that you can catch up if you want to. With that, have a great evening, and we'll see you soon.